Welcome to Sales and Marketing Talk Show. Today we are discussing storytelling and how you can use that one in your sales. And I have Mike Adams joining me. Welcome to the show, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well. Thanks, Samuli. Thanks for having me on.
And I think this is like super, super interesting topic. And I personally have realized the like value of stories in the last couple of years. I haven't been using them all the time. So I think it's something that really, really works, and like super excited to get on that topic today. But before we hop into story itself, what is your story, Mike? Why you are doing this?
Yeah, good question. Well, I'm trained as an electrical and mechanical engineer. So this is a fairly unusual job that I do now, probably for someone with my background. But about more than 20 years ago, I was actually running marketing for a software company. We were selling software to oil and gas companies. And I had a team of pre-sales marketing people who could demonstrate different parts of our software. And I got a job to do a 1-hour software demonstration to 400 of our VIP clients in Prague, in the Czech Republic. I was working in London at the time. And I, even though I'm an engineer, I knew enough to know that 1 hour for a software demonstration was too long. So I wrote a play. And I wrote parts for my different tech sales people. And I created this little scenario, which would be a problem that you could use our software to solve, a real example. And the play went for about 45 minutes. And then I had little time for questions. And 1 hour of questions later, my guys were still on the stage answering questions in their roles. And we went through the coffee break and through the next session. And I realized that our clients were very interested in that story about how you use the software, not anything about the software itself, its features or its product or anything like that. They wanted to know how it was used. So that was my first realization that the story about how and why you use the product that you're selling is much more interesting than its features. And I did that a few more times. And then I moved from the UK to Russia. This was in the year 2000. I was working in Moscow, and the Russian oil companies didn't know our company. The company I was working for was Schlumberger. It's the world's largest service company in the oil and gas industry. But the Russians didn't know our company, because the Russian oil business had been completely separate from the rest of the world. And you know that because you're in Finland, and Finland knows very well how Russia used to be. And yeah. So anyway, I told this very short story about the history of my company in Russia. And Schlumberger had gone into Russia in the late 1920s with very special technology that told the oil companies where the oil is in an oil well. And the Russians were the first to realize the importance of that invention. And so this very small French startup company got its first start in Russia. And then in 1933, Stalin nationalized Schlumberger, which means stole all the equipment and executed our country manager and kicked the whole company out of the Soviet Union, which is a very bad development for an entrepreneurial company. But fortunately, Schlumberger had also started work in Texas in the US and became a multi-billion dollar business. Today they have revenues around $30 billion. But I told the story of them going back into Russia. And my Russian clients were very interested in that story. In fact, I told the story one day to one client, and I visited another client the next day, and they told me my story. So that's how I realized that the story was traveling around the clients and was doing work. And good stories travel. They do work on their own, because people retell your stories. And so then I started noticing stories and got to use them. And nothing very special about my sales career, Salumi, other than the fact that I jumped from industry to industry. When I came back to Australia, I couldn't work in oil and gas. So I got a job in telecommunications industry selling mobile network equipment to our biggest operator here in Australia. That was for Siemens. And I used to joke to my friends that I was perfect for the job, except I didn't know anything about mobile network equipment or my client or Siemens. Apart from that, all good. But I did know enough to look for good stories and to ask questions about why the clients used our technology, and I was successful. And then that became Nokia Siemens, which is a company you might know well. And then the company now is Nokia. And 2015, I quit working for large companies. I actually changed industry 5 times. And I set up to see if I could help salespeople with their sales conversations, because when I'd been a sales leader across different industries, my number one problem, I would say, the thing that caused me the most problem was getting salespeople to say the right thing in front of their clients. So I would be there with them and I would be trying to kick them under the table because they were talking about their products and our products and services. They were not really connecting well with the client and they were not really hearing the client's story. And we tell stories to get stories. That's the reason we tell stories. So that's what I tried to do when I set up in 2015. And I did that by creating a training course that's entirely storytelling. And I wrote this book, you can see over my shoulder here, 7 Stories Every Salesperson Must Tell in 2018. And now I work for Anecdote, which is a global business storytelling company. We have about 60 partners around the world, and our programs are translated into lots of languages, but not Finnish, I'm sorry to say. But one of our clients is I think, your biggest by revenue company, which is Nokia. So I do work for Nokia globally, teaching them storytelling, just started this year, which is fantastic. Actually, one of my objectives of being a consultant to work for a couple of my past companies. So yeah, so that's why I do what I do. I teach storytelling to salespeople because it's just about the only thing that works. Salespeople are uniformly of the belief that they're very good at their job. That's because buyers have to buy and they all succeed somehow. But actually, salespeople are not very good at their job, mostly. Their buyers kind of tolerate them. But if they learn how to tell stories about their products, and if they learn how to say to the client, well, enough about me, what about you? Or if they tell a story about this client over here and then say, how are things going on here, and get a story back from their client, then they can learn a lot more about what's going on. They can propose the right thing and they can build relationships that really last. And that's been my experience in selling, is that when you connect properly with stories, then you build really strong business relationships and you sell the right thing in the right way. Yeah, so that's why I do what I do. It's very enjoyable. I work with some of the world's largest companies all over the world. And since the coronavirus hit in March last year, I do that all from my garage office. So I don't have to go anywhere. I just work tomorrow morning, I think, first thing with Latin America. And then I'm working with a company from Australia. And then in the evening, I'm working with a company in Singapore. So it's fantastic.
Yeah. And I really think that stories do work. And I still remember, I think it was the first day when I started at Advanced B2B, and our founders sat me down and they told me the founding story of the Advanced B2B. Mm-hmm. And then they asked me to take notes and after that one, tell them that story. And then I got feedback and then I did it again. Then I got feedback, then I did it again. And I think that is still a story that I use basically on every sales meeting. And I think that's a great point you mentioned there, that like how to get all of the salespeople to share the same thing with the client, not talk about your product, but rather the stories. And I think like stories are easy to remember. Like you might be forgetting facts about your products or something like that, but if there is a story that you are telling all the time, I think those really work.
Yeah, well, I think you are very fortunate that you had founders that already knew to tell you the story and to make sure that you could tell the story. My experience is that with every successful business, every business that does well and your business is doing well, there's a storyteller there somewhere in the founding. You know, one of the founders is a storyteller at least. Often they don't realize it. They don't know they're doing it. And often their staff are rolling their eyes because they heard those stories so many times. But their clients, of course, they're hearing it for the first time and they have a huge impact. And if you have leaders like that that realize how important stories are and make sure that you can tell it, it's a huge advantage, I think. Most companies don't have that. I didn't have that with any of the companies that I went to, that the stories were prepared. I had to go and find them myself.
Yeah, I agree on that one. And that actually has been something that I have across before this one. So super, super grateful for that one. But hey, let's hop into the like framework that you are talking. So the seven stories. And basically, in short, if we go just quickly through them, there is the personal connection story, there is a key staff story, company foundation story, insight stories, success stories, values stories, and negotiation stories. But let's go them through one by one. And the first one being the personal connection story. And I personally think that this is super important because still, even you are, if you are doing like a B2B business, from business to business, people are still, even though they are buying from the business, they are still like buying from you as a sales person. So I think this is super, super crucial. But like, what makes a good like personal connection story?
Well, maybe I'll back up just a little bit for a minute and just make sure that your listeners know what a story is, because we shouldn't make that assumption. A lot of people talk about stories as a kind of fashionable thing to talk about these days. When anecdote, my company started in 2004, you couldn't mention the word story because everybody thought that was for children and it's not businesslike to tell stories. Now a lot of people say the word story, but a lot of people don't understand what exactly a story is. So stories are about something that happened in a time and place. They're a sequence of events. This happened, and because of that, this happened, and because of that, this happened. And from the story, from the sequence, we can get some meaning. I remember one of my clients sent me a white paper from one of the world's largest consulting companies. I won't name them because it's embarrassing for them. But the title of the paper was "The Importance of Storytelling for Tech Sales." And it was 11 pages long. It had no story in it at all. It just had a lot of assertions and opinion from the consulting company. And so the author has thought story is important, but they haven't thought that it would be a good idea to use a story in their white paper, which makes me think they probably don't understand what a story is. So a story is something that happened. We tell true stories in business. We don't tell fairy tales. So we tell them in a time and place, something that actually happened that passes meaning. And usually stories are about people because the listeners are interested in people, right? So I told you a personal connection story right at the beginning. I told you how I got into storytelling and what happened to me and why I do what I do. That story was probably about 3.5 minutes long, which is a little bit longer than we would tell in a first meeting with a client because, you know, we're talking about ourselves, you know, but this is a podcast, so I can spend a bit more time to explain. But still, the purpose of that story is the same. The purpose is to show you a little bit about my character, who am I, and that I'm credible. I know something about storytelling, you know, and I know something about sales. I've been doing it for a while. And that's what we want to put into a story so that the buyer knows that we're not going to waste their time. You know, we're a normal person like them. And the main reason we tell a personal connection story is so we can say some magic words, which are enough about me. What about you? How, Samuli, did you get into being a podcast host, such a young guy, you know, and how did you get into working with B2B sales and marketing? I want to hear your story. So that's why we tell our story, so that we can get the client to tell us their story. And it might take 5 minutes or 6 minutes at the beginning of a meeting, but the difference is we kind of understand each other. We know what sort of people we are, and that makes the meeting run much better and usually much longer. The number of times a client has told me, Mike, we have 30 minutes for this meeting, and an hour and a half later, the meeting is finished, right? Because they trust you, and the meeting goes longer because they only told you 30 minutes because they're worried you're going to waste their time.
Exactly.
So that's the first story, the personal connection story. And the second story is similar, but instead of me telling a story about something that happened to me, I will tell a story about something that happened to one of my staff that the client, that the buyer needs to trust. When I worked with Siemens back in the, I don't know, about 2006, I was trying to sell a prepaid charging system to one of the big telecommunications companies in Australia. And I was concerned because, you know, we didn't have that technology in Australia. We had no technical experts in that technology, and I didn't know anything about it either. And we won the deal. And I went and saw the CTO after we won, and I was pretty surprised that we won. And I asked him, how come you bought from us? And he said, Vun Tat Chung, your technical guy out of Singapore was brilliant. He understood exactly what we needed, and I trusted him. And even though your competitor here, some Swedish company, has all of the experts in Australia, I trusted your guy. And I thought about that for a while. I thought, okay, not my good selling. But then I did remember that I had told a story about this guy, Vun Tat, before I brought him from Singapore. I told the client, we're going to bring our best guy from Singapore because he's just finished working on the largest prepaid charging system in the world for one of the biggest Indonesian companies. And this guy designed that system, and he's perfect for what you want because it's very similar to some of the requirements you have. So I told that little story about him before he came from Singapore, and the client already trusted him and already thought, okay, this is the guy I need to work with. So you see, being able to tell a story about your colleagues, maybe even about your CEO or your head of customer service or your customer success manager, this is really important because the client will sense that you are a credible company, that you have strong people backing up the business. So that's super important.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And like one thing that came to like my mind on the like key staff stories, that is like best that you personally tell that story, or like somehow you ask that person to share the story, whether it's through joining the meeting or through video or like something like that.
So in the example I gave you, I told my technical guy's story before he came to Australia. So before the client got to meet them. Now imagine we are meeting for the first time and I haven't told the story, we're meeting together. Then I still might tell that person's story because maybe he's not very accomplished at telling his own story. But also because we can brag a little bit about the other person. We can't brag about ourselves. So I can kind of make his story quite strong if I tell it, but less easy if he tells it himself. So there's still a benefit in being able to tell the other person's story, but you have to know that story. You have to know their background a little bit to be able to do it.
Yeah. Sounds good. But then after the key staff story is the like company foundation story. And actually here, I like to try something different. I can try to share our company story in short time, and then you can like share your thoughts on that one. Like, is it missing some kind of pieces or so? Sure. And maybe just for a background, we are a B2B growth marketing agency working with SaaS companies, and basically what our founding story is that like in order to understand like how we can help you. It would be great to understand like how a company called Advanced B2B was founded. And actually 10 years ago, our founders, Paavo and Mikko, used to work for a SaaS company called Snoopy. It was one of the fastest growing SaaS companies in Europe, and they were super sales led. So they did outbound calling, outbound email for companies. And they figured out that there should be a better way. And they started to do a lot of marketing, ebooks, webinars, articles, all that. And that started to work like really, really well. And they grew in Europe for 17,000 paying clients and like 9 different countries there. And they were actually on top 3 placement on Deloitte's fastest growing SaaS companies in Europe. And at that time, a company called Fonecta here in Finland bought Snoopy. And Mikko was CEO there and Paavo was sales director. So they ended up working for Fonecta for a while after the merger. And after they got kind of freed from there, they were thinking, what should we do next? And a lot of other SaaS companies asked them, hey, can you help us do the same thing with Snoopy? Like scale growth through marketing. And they decided to have an agency that is focusing on helping B2B SaaS companies to grow through marketing. And now fast forward 8 years, we are a team of 40 people helping SaaS companies to do that.
Yeah, very good. You were a good student for your company story. So this is what I listen for in the story. Firstly, does it have a time and a place and a character? So does it start somewhere in time at a place and a character? And it does. So that's the first tick, because stories need a time and place and a character. And then I'm listening for what we call moments, some things that draw us in and where we can imagine ourselves in the story. And very often conversation is a moment. So when your other client said, hey, can you come and do the same thing for us? This is conversation, and we can imagine ourselves there in the story. The other thing I look for in stories is usually some kind of up and down, because the story that says, you know, we started this company and we grew and everything was brilliant is kind of a boring story. Like usually some things go wrong. And I sense in this story that your founders didn't really like it so much after they got bought out, and it was, you know, that was then under another company. I can imagine this a little bit. So this is a bit of a down, you know. But then they decided to go and work on their own. So, yeah, the story is good. And I think that story also, what do I infer from that story if I was one of your buyers? Well, I infer that you were founded on a very successful larger company, that you've started on your own, you've taken techniques that really work, and it's not easy to build up from zero to 40 people. So that's already pretty impressive. So I infer that you're probably pretty good at what you do, which is what you would like someone to infer from your company story.
Yeah.
And the only thing I would say to maybe, you know, to make it better is, can we make it shorter? And usually that's just entirely how often you tell it. If you're quite practiced at telling the story, you can usually get it to like a minute, maybe a minute, 20 seconds. And this is probably the most that you want to spend on a company story, because you're sort of talking about your company. And the client may already have researched your company, so they might already know that stuff. So like you have to kind of have a guess at whether it's likely they know already, or they might have asked you, you know, how did you guys get into this business? And then you're ready to tell that story. So that's my coaching. So good job.
Yeah, thank you. And I think the timing is a great point. And what I think, and for example, for the foundation story, I actually got kind of three versions. I have the super short one. I would say that one was the middle one, and then have the long one as well, because for example in this story I left out still like many details and other things, but I think it is good for stories to have kind of the like different variations of time depending like where you are and like how much time do you have for the story. Do you agree on that one?
Yeah, I definitely do agree. And the company foundation story, generally I'm telling it if I have a very special reason to tell it or if I'm asked. Usually I will probably tell a personal connection story first up. It's just to personally get connected. Yeah, so those three stories, the personal connection story, the key staff story, and the company story, these are they're all connection stories, and they're all designed to help make a connection with the buyer and to build trust. So we want the buyer to get a trusting idea about us. You know, they can trust that we know what we're doing. We're credible and we've done this before and they can trust us. So that's that purpose. But then of course, the next job is to sell something. So for sure they trust you, but we would like to sell something, right? And selling is all about change. We need a buyer to change because we don't have anything to sell if they're not changing. And in order for us to talk about change, we need to get into a deep conversation. We need to understand their situation. If what your buyer would like to buy could be researched on the internet and you could download a white paper and you could find out everything and you could just buy it, then of course no salesperson required, right? So I'm going to assume that your listeners need to consult. They need to understand the buyer's situation and they need to work out what's the right thing to sell or whether even they could sell anything. Maybe they can't. So the first story to understand is what we call a success story. If your company has been in business for, you know, any length of time, then you have had some successes. And the most interesting story to talk about change with your buyer is to tell a story of another client that's in their situation that succeeded with what you do. And these we should prepare. Now, a lot of people think that these are case studies, but a case study is something different. So case study is what marketing departments do, and they take a successful situation and they anonymize it so that you can't figure out usually who the client is or who the people were. And they often write it in a sort of three-part structure. And the parts are like this. Here was our other client in a big mess. We came in and provided this solution and fixed it. And now the result, everything fantastic. And this story doesn't sell. This story is not believable, but more importantly, the your new buyer, your prospect, they can't see themselves in that story because that's a story of vendor success. We have to tell the story of your other client's success. So we have to start with them and we have to make that person, the other person in your other client, we have to make that person the hero of your story. So we teach this in six parts. So the first part is to just explain to us about that person in that company and then what's going wrong. What's the challenge they're facing? Now tell us how they met your company. What was the circumstances that you met? Was it a tender? Were you working for them on another project? Did they find you on your website? Whatever. However they met your company is interesting to your buyer, to your new buyer.
Yeah.
Then talk about a plan that you worked on together. How did you plan and work together? Now, yeah, in this description, you can explain actually how you do your exploration. And then what did they not want? What were their concerns? What were their objections? What were the things they were worried about? And then how did you succeed? How did they succeed and how did they personally succeed? And what happened to them personally through this? So now you're telling a story of one of your clients and how they transformed their business and themselves. And that's a very interesting story for your buyer. Should I give you an example?
Yeah, I think that would be great.
Okay. So there's a lady, Kathy, she runs organization development, leadership development for one of the world's largest IT consulting companies, a US company. And she trains between 500 and 800 director level leaders on a 1 year program every year, rolling 1 year program. And at the end of that training, they do a project in teams, 5 to 8 people in teams on a kind of a new technology area. And then the groups all fly to the headquarters in the US and they present their projects. And Kathy was sitting next to the managing partner in one of these presentations. And he turned to her at the end and said, "That was terrible. Is that how we present to our clients? That was absolutely boring. We have to fix this. We cannot present like that." Now I told you the first two parts. I told you about the company and I told you about Kathy and her problem. Now, Kathy had been working with Anecdote with the senior partners for some time on leadership storytelling. So she contacted our managing director, Mark, and he happened to be in the US, but he was on the West Coast and she's in New York. And she told him the problem and he said, "I would like to meet you." And she said, "You only have 30 minutes. But anyway, Mark flew to New York for a 30-minute meeting. And 90 minutes later, they had a plan. So Mark said, "What we do, because we're coming up to the next one, what we'll do is we'll run a series of webinars." This is in 2019, so before COVID. And Kathy said, "Don't know about webinars. Don't think our people will follow them because they're going to be two-hour webinars." And so they talked through the how to make those very interesting. And then they said, "We will use our global partner network to train your people where they are. So we'll use our partners in Europe and South America and North America and Australia, APAC, and they'll train your guys and we'll train them to deliver their projects without using PowerPoint." And a couple of months later in the US headquarters, 500 of those people delivered their projects without PowerPoint. And the managing partner said to Kathy, "This is much better. This is how our people need to present. Much more interesting." Kathy is still doing that job, actually. That's the job she loves. So she's doing the global leadership development still using storytelling. So you see, this story takes a little bit longer because it has more events in it. So we have the events leading up to the problem, and then how did they meet our company? How did we work on a plan? What did the client not want? What were they worried about? And then how did it succeed? But if you tell that story and you're telling it to someone in a similar situation to Kathy, so someone who has a problem with communications and looking at leadership communication, for example, then they'll be interested in that and they'll listen to a 3-minute story.
Yeah.
So that's called a success story.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. And actually one question before hopping to like other stories, like if we have 7 stories here and we, for example, we have a short meeting and we just don't have time to tell all of those stories. Like how should you like understand which story to like tell and when?
Sure. So usually I know I'm researching the meeting and I'm trying to figure out, do I have a relevant success story for this client? First question. If I have a relevant success story, I would like to tell a connection story about myself and a success story. So that will be my plan, to tell 2 stories. And if I'm successful with that, I will get another meeting and we will keep going and I'll get an opportunity to tell another story. Now, what if I don't have a success story? So sometimes we don't have a success story. We're an entrepreneurial company or we have a new product and we don't have any success yet. So then I might need to tell an insight story, which is the story about how we discovered that we should make that product or we should make that new product. And there is something there. There is always a story there that we should tell. So you could call that like the discoverer or the researcher's story. What was the eureka moment that we suddenly realized, this is what the market needs. So we tell that story because that's all we have. I prefer to tell a success story because that sells better. But if I don't have it, I will tell an insight story. And then the other stories are for a little bit down the track. So the client now, they have an idea that they should change and they like your idea, but still they probably have some concerns. They have to find the money and they have to convince other people in their organization that they should spend money with your company. So how does your company behave after you sign the deal? What are the values of your company? Are you an ethical company? What sorts of behaviors should I expect from your people? And this is a really powerful story type. We call it a value story. And it's a story about exactly this. We don't have to tell it in the first meeting, but we should tell it at some point in the process, in the sales process. So I heard a nice one in a, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that like value story and that it sounds super important, but I think this is, at least for me, like when I went through the 7 stories and I was thinking like, which one would be the one that I would love to hear an example, because I'm not like totally understanding this. And I think this was the one for me, and I think this is one for like all the listeners as well. Like you just cannot tell that I'm trustworthy and I'm this. But
yeah, that doesn't work for story. Anyone, does it? You trust me. I'm a salesperson. Just trust me.
Yeah.
I will give you a good example from one of my clients in a training course. So this came to me from a sales guy, right? So he's working for a systems integration company and he was working to bring on board a new supplier to their company. And he brought the contract to his CEO to sign. So this was the supply agreement. So the CEO is in his office with his pen and he's just reading through and initialing clause by clause. And he gets to a clause that says that his company will receive a 10% commission for any of their products and services that they on-sell, that they integrate.
Yeah.
And the CEO just crosses this clause out. He says, no, we don't take commissions from any of our suppliers because that could put us in conflict with our client. We want our client to know that the only way we get paid is by them and we only provide products and services that are exactly right for them.
Yeah.
By doing that, that CEO signaled to his salespeople and to his clients and to his partners, this is how we behave. This is our value. And these stories are very powerful, Salumi. These ones are, they get told and they get retold and they're powerful for your own staff to hear them, for your partners to hear them, maybe even your shareholders, but also, of course, for your buyers.
Yeah. And I think that's a good example and like kind of super simple one as well. Like nothing,
very simple.
You know, nothing big, nothing like super special, but still working very well. You mentioned there that like already on like your story that you notice a story is working when someone told that story back to you. And over here you mentioned that this was kind of story that people can tell for other people. So like what you should be taking in consideration, like when building the story, that it will be a kind of story that people tell to other people as well. Like, is there some like tips on that? What makes a story like that?
Well, this is a million-dollar question. You know, if I knew that, I could write a novel and make a fortune. The practical answer, you know, I'm a practical person. The practical answer is we try lots of stories and we notice which ones work. And we keep telling the ones that work. And we stop telling the ones that don't work. The ones that don't work, they're not a problem. Like, it doesn't matter. But you start to notice which stories work. Now, that story that I told you about the CEO and the contract, I've told that story maybe 100 times. And I've told it to my other clients. And so this story has traveled all over the world, right? So it's a good story, right? But it's a pretty simple story, like you said. But it demonstrates the right behavior. And that's why people like it, because people like fairness and they like people to behave the right way. They like to know that you will behave the right way. And so, yeah, so that's, but there isn't really, you know, I could give you a little bit of theory about what makes a fantastic story and that, but really you try the different stories and see which ones work. I could just say one thing, which is that good stories are about people who have to make an important decision. So in that example, the CEO could have taken the 10% commission, right? Probably there was some money to be made right there by signing that contract, but he chose not to. So he made a decision that his values were more important than making money right now. It turns out that humans cannot make a decision without reference to our emotions. So a decision for a human is a decision to feel good into the future. So when we make a decision, we reference our emotional memory, which sits above our eyes here in the frontal cortex, and we kind of predict how we will feel when we make that decision. And if we don't feel good, we don't make the decision. So a decision, like by definition, is an emotional decision. And when we hear a story about someone making a decision, we can imagine how they're feeling. So that's how stories pass emotion. So, you know, the stories I've been telling pass facts. They tell you what happened, but they also pass emotion, because when people make decisions in stories, we use our own neocortex to imagine, what if I was making that decision? How would I feel? And that's how we feel emotions in stories. It's kind of the only way you can pass emotions really in story in business meetings without losing your temper or something like that, right? Yeah. You can pass emotions in stories just by telling stories about people making important decisions, and the emotion comes through.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense. Hey, then lastly, you talk about negotiation stories. What do you mean by this?
So I've spent most of my career working in big multinational companies on very big deals, like, you know, hundreds of million dollar deals in some cases. And negotiations are often very long and protracted. When two big companies try to sign a deal, it can take a long time. And you have kind of two negotiations to do. You have the negotiation to do with your client. Actually, maybe you have three negotiations. So you have the negotiation with your client. Your client, someone, preferably someone who wants your business, wants you to work for them. Your client has a negotiation to do internally in their company to persuade the other people in their company that they should buy you. And you have some more negotiation to do back in your own company to explain why this is a good deal. So you're in this sort of complicated situation. And if it's a big deal, very few people know what to do. And the people who are very good at this, usually I've done it a lot, they're experienced, right? And there are a lot of books on negotiation, and the very best ones are all storytelling books. They're all full of stories. And then they usually have some sort of technique there as well. So my recommendation in negotiation books is throw away the technique because your buyer reads them as well. Procurement managers love to read negotiation sales books. So they know all the techniques, but the stories in those books, they really pass a lot of information. They teach you how to behave and they teach you how to think about negotiation. And I'll give you a quick example. Yeah. When I was working in the oil and gas industry, I went on a training course in Houston, and there was a Brazilian guy there, Brazilian sales guy, and he was on his phone the whole time. And I overheard some of the conversation, and I don't know much Portuguese, but he was talking about coffee, and we sell software to oil and gas companies. So I asked him, like, what's he talking about? And he explained to me that they had a deadlock in a contract negotiation with their client that was the Brazilian national oil company, Petrobras. Petrobras wanted to pay my company in local currency, which was cruzados, and it wasn't worth much in those days. And we wanted to get paid in US dollars, and we couldn't agree. And it went for months. And eventually we agreed to be paid in the local currency, but we had a little clause put in that said, if the exchange rate varies by more than a certain amount, you pay us in commodity. And the commodity was coffee. And so this guy on the training course in Houston was trying to sell the coffee because the exchange rate did change and he had all of these tons of coffee to sell. And at the end of the course, he came to me with a big smile and said, Mike, I sold it for more than the contract value. So he was very happy. So look, it's a little story about thinking flexibly in a negotiation, right? And this is what you need. You need to be able to think in different ways, and stories can really help. So you can tell your sponsor the client stories about how to get around problems. You can use stories back into your own organization to change people's opinion. So yeah, and we do all storytelling for negotiation as well. So it's a topic. It's a topic on its own. You can do a full training course just on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Hey, then I'm sure that we have people listening there that are like now thinking the same that I am, like, okay, here is the seven stories, and I want to take those ones into action. And like, first idea that comes down to my mind is that now I need pen and paper, and I need to write down seven stories there to like identify what those are, and then just try those, get feedback and see what is working and scale on those ones. And then if something isn't working, then think again, like, how should I be changing this story? So is that the way to go, or like how to get started?
Well, you could buy my book. That's a pretty cheap way to get started because it has the instructions in it and the different stories. And you can get it as an audiobook or an ebook or paperbook. And the best way to practice actually is to record a video message and send it to your colleague and ask them for their feedback. And the nice thing about doing that is it will tell you exactly how long it is, and you can listen to it yourself before you send it, so you can delete it and try again. So it's actually a very good way to practice storytelling is to use video message. And that's what we do actually in our training courses. We use video message to coach everybody individually on their stories. And if you tell a story like in a video message, then you ask your colleague, what do they think? And you ask them, what do you infer? What do you get from this more than what I just said? Because we normally infer a lot more than what was said in a story. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great tip. You mentioned there that you are telling some stories because they are working. But how do you know that the story is working? Like, is it that sales that you are getting, or is it the smile on people's faces, or is it the feedback that you are getting? Like, how do you know that story is working?
A really good indication that your story is working is that your client starts telling you stories. And this is such a beautiful thing, because now you start to understand what's happening in their world. You just feel a connection and they start to tell you stories. So this is probably the best test that it's working. And you know, I told the story about Mark, our managing director, and he went all the way to New York for a 30-minute meeting, and it went for 90 minutes. This is another good indication that your stories are working, because your meetings go longer, because you kind of forget about time when you're listening to a story, because it's interesting, right? And most of the time we don't tell stories, so most of the time our business is not very interesting. It's very boring. People like to show very boring PowerPoint presentations, which I tend to tell my salespeople not to show at all. So.
Yeah, makes sense. And actually, so that the story of this sales and marketing talk show like continues as well. I always have this point in end of every interview where I have a question from my previous guest to you, and then you have the chance to ask a question for my next guest. And we actually covered a bit already on this topic. On my last episode, I have Richard Harris joining me. And with Richard, we talked about what are the best questions to ask in sales, when to ask them, how to get the permission on that one. And when Richard heard that I'm talking with you about storytelling, Richard's question actually for you is that how to get customer to share their story before telling your story. And I think what you mentioned there comes down to this topic and would be interesting to hear as well. Like, do you think it's necessary to get the customer to tell it first?
Well, it can go either way. I mean, we say we tell a story to get a story, but we also certainly can get the client to tell us a story straight away. Most of those books that you see behind me, those sales training books, they're full of stories. They're full of questions that salespeople can ask, but mostly the questions are not really the right questions. Most of our questions are how, what, and why questions. So we ask things like, so you are selling software as a service, you know, we ask the client, you know, how many servers do you have and how many staff do you have? And then we ask them, what is your GDPR policy and what is your configuration? And then we ask them, why don't you have a GDPR policy? But none of those questions get you a story. None of those questions get the client to tell you deep anything, because you're just asking them to get information. So if you can ask a when question or a where question, when was the last time you saw that fail? Where were you then? You'll get a story. If you can get a client to go to a moment in time, you can get a story. So for example, the client says something very abstract, like sustainability is very important for us in this tender. I have no idea what that means. It sounds good. I will nod my head. But I could ask the client, look, we also think sustainability is important, but for my curiosity, could you give me an example of good sustainability management? Now I can get a story. I get an example. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Or the client comes to you and says something like, I don't believe in your product roadmap. Okay. So I could ask them what, you know, I could ask them, okay, really? But what I should ask is what happened? What's happened to make you say that? What happened is a where question. What's happened just now to make you say that? Or what's happened in the past to make you say that? So what's happened? Give me an example. Where were you when that happened? These are questions that will get you to a concrete example. They'll get the client telling your story. And that is what you need to hear. You need to find out what's really happened and what the client really means. And in my personal selling career, this has made a huge difference to my career, to get the client telling me specifically what they mean instead of pretending I understand what they mean, because I usually don't.
Yeah. Great points. And thank you for answering Richard's questions. And then on my next episode, I have Mark Huber joining from Metadata. And Mark is actually director of growth there. And with Mark, we are discussing about their event called Demand that they just had a few weeks ago. And like, how did they do that, what kind of resource they got, kind of a case example of that one. And I have now Mark's LinkedIn profile open here as well. And based on his about section, Mark is really a storyteller himself as well, because in Mark's about section, it says that I purchased Metadata in 2020 as a director of demand generation at Fast Radius, first time customer too. the more I use it, the more I realize Metadata was building something special, and I knew I wanted to be part of it. So I joined Metadata in August of 2020 as a second full-time marketer. I think that's like, it's a great story, like super great story.
We call that the Victor Kiam connection stories. Victor Kiam was an American venture capitalist. And he told the story that his wife bought him a shaver, and he loved the shaver so much, he bought the company. Could he give me an example of when he heard the client tell him a story that meant he won the deal, that he could use that story to win the deal?
That's an interesting question. I think it will. I will need to send that one to Mark before the interview as well, so he can be thinking of that one, because I think it's a hard one, but hard ones are nice ones for sure. It's great. It's great. But yeah, I will be asking that one from Mark. And big thanks for joining this discussion, Mike. A lot of valuable ideas. And at least for me, I got a lot of ideas on my own stories. And I really need to be writing those one down and learning on those. And big thanks for everyone listening to this episode as well. And go out and make your stories and use them and get feedback and go from there.
Yeah, and if you're in a sales team, then collect your stories as a team. One of the things I really noticed when I joined, well, I was joining new industries, but you know, if you have to find the stories yourself, it's slow. But if you work as a team and you collect stories and share them, then it's much faster to bring on new salespeople, and it really helps each other as well. So don't just think about a story as a personal thing. It's something you can share in your team and work out which ones work the best.
This was Sales and Marketing Talk Show, and I'm your host, Samuli Salonen. Thank you so much for listening, and see you in the next episode.